Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Premier Chelsea, your source for all things Premier League, but starting with Chelsea first. Coming into you on your speakers and headsets, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Jackie from Houston, and I have Rahul here from Connecticut. Hey, Rahul, how's it going?
Hey, Jackie, it's all right. I've been in better moods before, but I'm glad we didn't do this right after the game, so I'm a little bit better now.
Yeah, so for the fans out there, hopefully you saw our Instagram post. We actually tried to record this a few days ago, but unfortunately in this world with a little bit of technical difficulties, our recording didn't come out the way we were anticipating. So here we are again. Hopefully this one is smooth and we can release it to you guys as soon as possible. So I'm assuming you're a little bit gloom because of the result that we just saw, huh?
Yeah, man, it's not looking good. And as much as I want us to hold on and improve this, I'm seeing no signs of improvement, so I am pretty disappointed.
Yeah, I can imagine. So we have a couple of games to actually review from a Chelsea perspective. So why don't we go ahead and get kicked off, because we do have a lot to cover today.
Yeah, like you said, we do have a lot, so let's jump right into it. Starting with Fulham versus Chelsea. And a 1-0 win for Chelsea, and at that point, after that day, obviously we didn't think we had turned the corner. But it was good to get that win and a clean sheet and kind of feel like we were getting back or at least on the way to recovery. And it was a tough game. Don't get me wrong. Fulham played very well, even with 10 men, and gave us a really difficult game. But we found a way to win. Mason Mount gets it done and 3 points. And it looks like, okay, you know, performance was okay, but the result's really what it counts, and it's a springboard to the building something. And then we go into the Leicester game and see nothing of what we've seen from Chelsea earlier this season, maybe a little bit in the Fulham game. So I'm really concerned.
Yeah, so just touching on the Fulham game really quickly, Mason Mount was by far our best player for that particular game. I agree with you, especially on the fact that Fulham went down to 10 men. I, for one, was very surprised that we couldn't dominate a little bit more. Now, as far as possession and things go, we did dominate and control the game, but it just seems at times we're not very clinical. We're kind of disjointed as a team. And, you know, just to jump off of that into the Leicester game, which, long story short, we lost, it's the same story over and over again. So really, to focus on the Leicester game, why don't you take us through the team lineup and then we can kind of talk about that one in more detail, because that's really where major discussion points are going to come out of.
Yeah, so we started with Mendy in goal. Reece James came back into the team. He was rested, you can say, against Fulham. So he was back in. Thiago Silva started again, which you and I were debating if he would, but he was back. Rudiger played a second game in a row, which I was pretty shocked by, because I thought, well, he didn't play against, Zuma didn't play against Fulham, so he's definitely going to feature against Leicester, but that didn't happen. Ben Chilwell keeps his spot, which I'm okay with. Kai Havertz comes back into the team after missing out against Fulham. Kovacic playing that DM, deeper midfield player role, which was very shocking. Because, yes, Conte was out, but we've barely seen Kovacic in that role. And then Mason Mount completing the midfield, which Mason Mount, whenever he's fit, he's going to be playing, and it's merited based on his last few performances. Hudson-Odoi comes into the team. I know we've been talking about him in the past, of how he deserves to be starting and getting more minutes, so that was good to see. Tammy Abraham and Pulisic completed the starting 11.
Yeah, so overall, a pretty strong starting 11, but we probably need to touch on a couple of things there. The first one was Kovacic. He's not naturally a defensive midfield player. He can play the role, but most of the time that we've seen him do it, it's usually in a pivot. So he's got Kante or Jorginho, who are more suited to that position. It's interesting that he chose him, because you have been screaming for Billy Gilmore for weeks now. Again, I didn't think Billy was going to get this game, just because of, you know, you want somebody with a little more experience against a Leicester side that's out for blood, essentially. But I don't understand why Jorginho didn't take that role. I think he's trying to rotate, but it's not like the games were 2 days apart or 3 days. I mean, there's a decent amount of time for players to rest and recoup and keep going. So that's a little interesting one. I want to get a little more of your feedback on that particular one. And one that I actually noticed and I was messaging you about was Rudiger. So when Rudiger came in against Fulham, I honestly said, okay, is this a rotation or is this the resurgence of Rudiger? Because again, between the last match that was played and this particular match, the timeline isn't so packed that you would imagine that Zuma can play back-to-back games, especially if in the last few games or how many ever games now, he's the first choice center back alongside Thiago Silva. So just want to get your thoughts on those two players.
Yeah, the Kovacic one, I'm almost wondering and thinking that we started off a little bit different in terms of a 4-2-3-1 versus the traditional 4-3-3, because that's the only way it makes sense that Kovacic and Mount may be the two that were sitting in front of the defense and Kai Havertz was a little bit further forward. But all of that kind of went away when Leicester get that early goal. And then from that point, we just looked very disjointed, like you said, and didn't look like a team at all. Coming back to the Rudiger one, I am very surprised as to how Rudiger has transitioned into a player that was almost out the door in October, right at the end of the transfer window, to then becoming second choice center back of Chelsea Football Club. That just blows my mind.
Well, and this begs the question, right? Because we've discussed what happened to Tomori. And I'm not bringing Tomori in because he played or didn't play or was not on the bench or whatnot. Was something happened where Tomori fell out of favor? Because Tomori was decent last season and he's up and coming. He's a Chelsea boy through and through. And with the same respect to Zuma, what happened? Is there something going on behind the scenes that we're not seeing? Because it wasn't like Zuma was terrible individually. The team on the whole has been kind of up and down. So that alone surprised me. And I think Rudiger did make kind of a mistake for one of the goals that happened, but in the two games he played, he was okay. So it's not like he's miles above Zuma that he deserves a start or whatnot. And again, if he does deserve a start because of resting, you played him in the Fulham game. Why does he start this particular game? And that's something I just don't understand.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And Zuma has been a little shaky recently, but you've got to realize that him and Silva were forming a partnership. They were getting to know each other. They were playing in their preferred positions in that right-hand and left-hand combination, which we've seen had worked well. And we were building something with Chilwell, Zuma, Silva, and James as our back four and Mendy behind them. And now all of a sudden, it's Rudiger coming in. And not to say that there isn't a cohesion between them. Obviously, they all train together. But when it's game time, you just know I've been playing 6-7 games with Zuma as Silva. I kind of know what he's going to be doing. And I just don't know why Rudiger is playing. And it just seems like Lampard is sending a message to maybe Zuma is that you haven't been good recently, which is fine. I get that you want to send a message. But that resting him or not playing him in the Fulham game was more than enough for me.
And this also begs the question that I think you asked me a few weeks ago of, does Lampard know his best 11? And I'm pretty sure I answered it with a yes and a no, or more towards yes, because as far as best 11 goes, you know your solid core of players. You do rotate one or two out here, especially given injuries or suspensions or whatnot. But I think in the last few games, or at least through this, what I would call difficult patch, we seem to kind of be, you know, playing chess a little bit. Well, we'll try this guy here and then pluck him out and try that guy there here. And Werner's not firing, so we'll play Werner on the right, the left, the middle. Or just drop him for another game. And one thing I've noticed, skipping the forwards or the midfielders, a solid, solid defense wins you championships. And I'm not saying, and I've always said this, actually from day one we started this podcast, this season isn't one we expected Chelsea to win a championship, but the statement is solid defense wins you championships. And for the most part, when we were going through that 17-game or 16-game unbeaten streak, it was a pretty solid defense as far as same goalkeeper and the same back four, barring an injury or a quick rest here and there or maybe a suspension, but it was the same four. So if Zuma has been a little shaky, it's not, again, it's not down to him. The team as a whole has been shaky. So what are we doing sending a message to the most stable thing that we've had through the 16-game or 17-game unbeaten run. I just don't understand that piece.
Yeah, and to add some color to this defensive issues we've been having, away from home in the first 29 Premier League games as Chelsea manager for Lampard, he has conceded the most goals away from home as a manager for Chelsea. Again, it's 29 games as a permanent manager, but he's conceded 50 goals, which is four more than Glenn Hoddle, which is the next person on this list. So defensive issues and instability has been something that's been Lampard's Achilles heel right from the beginning.
Right. And not to get hung up on the defense now, I think we need to talk about the team as a whole and the match as a whole. So, I mean, we pushed a little bit for Kai Havertz. We've been big fans of him. Yes, he's gone through a rough patch. What did you make of his game overall?
He was very timid, didn't show up. Not the Kai Havertz we invested in. And it's getting to a point where I think the confidence is totally shot. And that's resulting in lackluster performances on the field. Yes, the team as a whole is suffering, but for someone that's supposed to have all this talent and potential, there seems to be no output coming at all.
Yeah, and that seems to be cascading throughout the whole team, because a player that you have praised so heavily on this podcast, in fact, you nicknamed him Beast James. Did he not have a shocker in this game? I mean, an absolute shocker.
Yeah, worst game I would say I've seen from Beast James. I'm not going to change that now. But after that Arsenal game, I thought this is a wake-up call for him, giving away that penalty and just getting destroyed on that right-hand side for Chelsea. And then he comes back into this team, and what do Leicester do? Target that area. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Now, yes, Reece James is young, but now this is going to the coaching squad and team. What are you doing, realize and seeing that Leicester, Arsenal, Man City are all bombing down that one flank and not making any changes?
Yeah, I just don't understand that at all, because at some point, you would imagine for any top level team, we do the post-match analysis. And for anybody who doesn't know what the post-match analysis is, typically coaches, managers, staff, and actually players sit down in the room, and there's actually a team of people that have chipped and chopped and snipped and snapped the game into key moments or key points to have you visualize and watch what happened, where it went wrong, where was your positioning, what you could have done better to avoid something like that. And if it's a repeat thing over and over and over again, I mean, there are two cases here. It's quite simple, in my opinion, of course. One is we're not doing a good enough job at coaching, plain and simple. Or two, which I hope this isn't the case, the player just doesn't care. And I don't know what the answer is, but there were certain moments as I was watching this game where Reece just didn't seem to care. And again, I said I don't want to think that's the answer, but didn't want to run back, you know, out of position several times. And it's one of those things where, yes, young players can lose their concentration or whatnot, but this is a young man that has been on good form for the most part, even though we've been in a bad patch. In fact, we've named him man of the match several times in different games. And he's pushing for an England spot. You as a player at some point should probably think, maybe I need to step up my individual performances, just like Mason Mount, for example.
Yeah, those are two good points, and I think there's a third point, and this may transition over into the next point that I would like us to discuss is, are the players playing for Lampard? We've seen them be so good from October into the first week of December, and all of a sudden, something has changed, and it's all gone down south, and it's at a point where the players are kind of not interested or making the same runs when we're trying to attack and getting into each other's space. And that doesn't seem like a team of professionals that are fighting and giving their all out there.
Yeah, to answer your question, I don't think they're playing for Frank Lampard. And that may be either they're tired of his tactics or they're bored or they're so low on confidence, it doesn't matter to them anymore. Ultimately, the way I look at it, and I think many people would understand this, if you have a job, you perform at your job because you get a paycheck to perform at your job. I'm stripping away the passion, the talent, the excitement of being a professional footballer. You get paid thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pounds each week to show up and do a decent job. And if part of doing a decent job is doing the basics, which I've said multiple times, which is running up and down, blocking players, just stringing passes together. Yes, there's some things managers can do, but at that point, I'm paid to perform. If the manager is, I'm not a fan of the manager or of his tactics, do the basics. You're getting paid. So skip some of the other players, but you're talking about Reece James, you're talking about Mason Mount, who's been okay, but I'm going to lump him into this. You're talking about Tammy Abraham. These are boys that we've said are Chelsea through and through. And so forget Frank for a minute. Play for the badge. Play for this club that you've been at since you were 7, 8, 9 years old. Some of these boys have been here a very, very long time. And the same goes for the senior players now. We have to hit on them or some who are more experienced, not necessarily Chelsea senior players, but where does this work? In which career does it work where you perform poorly and you still take your paycheck next week? I just don't understand it.
It works in football, and it most often the manager ends up taking the blame and the cut, and then all of a sudden you see players focused, energized, and ready to go under a new manager. But you're right, and I would throw Hudson-Odoi into this too. I know we've been very complimentary and throwing praises his way, but early in that second half, I remember we saw a cross come in. James Justin, the Leicester left back, is in our box unmarked, getting a free header on goal. And that comes from obviously Reece James getting sucked into the middle. And James Justin just peers off of Hudson-Odoi, slowly walks into the box, and Hudson-Odoi is seeing him do this, and there's no kind of let me get back and try to defend this. And at that point, I think it's you're right. It's they're not playing for him, and I don't know how they get back on side and start performing and doing the things that he's expecting of them.
You know, it's interesting because I watched a couple of Frank Lampard post-match interviews, and you can tell he knows that the club are in a tough spot. Obviously, everybody can tell the club are in a tough spot, but we say this over and over again, nobody would be hurting more than a Chelsea man. And from my perspective, and I would really like to get your honest opinion on this, we've made some comments about drop Kai for 4 or 5 games, or, you know, if Zuma is not playing so well, you need a solid back four. That's another good example. Just stick through that one. But he's basically said the only way to get out of this is to continue playing the same way. Or and it's not, I'm rephrasing a little bit, but it's to push through this. And I understand what he means, but when you say push through this, something has to change. You can't just show up in the same formation with the same. And yes, he's tinkering players, so I forgive myself for that. I don't mean that, but it's the same ideology. There's no tactical changes. There's nothing different. It's the same, or if not similar, substitutes as far as who comes on, who comes in the 65th minute. It's almost like shades of Sarri last season, where it's like Barkley for Kovacic or Kovacic for Barkley. We knew what was happening right on time. And teams start to, good teams specifically, do the analysis and start to understand. And you'll see managers looking at their, what, 65th minute. Okay, same subs coming on. Change game plan. And you actually see teams change game plan because even when we have 70, 80% of the ball, nothing happens. Absolutely nothing happens.
You bring up some very good points, and I think now this discussion is going to focus more on Lampard. We've blamed the players. We've tried to get them to be highlighted in terms of what's going on. But now it comes to Lampard, and if you're 2-0 down at Leicester City, you make no changes at halftime. You wait, like you said, till the 65th minute to make a change, which is exactly what you did in the Fulham game. Now, the result was different at halftime, but it was the same timing of changes. We did the same thing against Man City. We spoke about this here, where he sent out all 9 substitutes to warm up while he was in the dressing room with the first 11. And There's no changes at halftime. There's no talk of I'm gonna switch up formation to start a game. Leicester have been in great form. I need to be a little more defensive and protect my goal and hit them on the counter. It's just like we're 4-3-3. We play the way we play and forget about everything else. And that concerns me and that bothers me because that's not what we saw from him last year. Yes, we were not consistent. We had some bad results and we weren't winning every weekend. But you knew that if we didn't win one weekend, the next weekend was going to be something different and we were going to give it our all in that formation. And that brings me to the Spurs game last season where he completely changed it up, played a back three, played defensive, and we won the game 2-0 away to Spurs. He did that again at home and changed it up. And this season, I'm not seeing any of that.
Yeah, and honestly, in the beginning of the season before the run, he did change it up to some degree because we went from a 4-2-3-1, which was up and down, and he finally found a 4-3-3 that worked for him. And I almost wonder if when he changed to the 4-3-3 and we went on that long unbeaten run, he was like, oh, this one works. We just have to play through it to make sure it continues working. I understand the ideology behind that. I understand what it means that, okay, if it's worked before, it'll continue to work. But at some point, players are human beings and they get tired of it. So switch it up. If we need to go to three at the back, five at the frickin' back, go to 4-4-2, which he did try that a little bit, so I'm going to give him a little bit of credit there. But change the game to the opponents you're playing with. And you and I can sit here and say this all day, so I don't want to get too sucked up into it because we're not professional managers. It's hard to run a team of 25, 26 people. But what are your thoughts on Lampard now? Because you and I have been very vocal about where we see him as a manager and what we've said on previous episodes, but it's dragged on a little bit too much now, and I just want to get your honest opinion and what this means for Frank.
Listen, I desperately want him to succeed. I want him to be our manager. I want him to be there lifting trophies with us, just like he did as a player. But after yesterday's game, and before I say what I'm about to say, I am still Lampard in. But after yesterday's game, I'm thinking in watching his post-match interview, and he's hurting. You can see it in his face. And I'm thinking, but why aren't you doing anything to change the situation? That's my first question. My second question for him is, okay, the results haven't been good, but we don't hear any talk of, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. It's just the same thing. I'm going to blame the players, and the players need to be doing better. And it's just like he's a little lost, and he doesn't know what to fall back on because he doesn't have the experience.
Right.
And it's getting to a point where Chelsea are sticking with him. I mean, we heard reports that he's going to be out after the Leicester game, or if he doesn't turn it around, he only has 3 games. But Chelsea are sticking with him, just like they did with Sarri and Conte to a point where things weren't going well, and they let them get to the end of the season. So there is a change in this board and this owner's way of doing things. But I tell you, if this doesn't change in the next 3-4 weeks, he's going to be gone, and that's going to hurt me a lot because I want him to succeed as a guy. But improvements and changes have to come soon.
Yeah, I think you saying he's lost is a very good point, actually. I don't know of a better way to describe it. Initially, when we had issues and Thiago Silva came in and we kind of settled the ship, I still mentioned that we need to go out and get a defensive coach because Thiago Silva brought experience and leadership for the back line at the very least. And of course, we signed a goalkeeper that stabilized everybody's confidence, but you could still see there were problems. And the Leicester game was very evident that there are problems just in positioning alone. And the more I think about it, and I've said this before, is think about who Frank Lampard or even Jody Morris were. They were midfielders. Their eyes and their body language was always facing forward. They didn't always turn around to worry about what was behind them and how to position. Now, Lamps did a little bit of that towards the end of his career, but still, he played in a pivot where Mikel was next to him to do that particular job. I've said he needed a defensive coach, and it doesn't need to be John Terry. Not everybody has to go yell, and it needs to be somebody who has that 10, 15 years of experience of, look, boys, defend as a unit, not just the back four, your Kantes, your Kovacic, your Mounts, your Kais. Forget scoring. defend, keep the ball, because you're keeping 80% of the ball, but keep it without losing it and hitting on the counterattack. Go two games with draws, three games with draws, and then the confidence goes, okay, we're not leaking goals. Now let's turn our attention, and Lampard, you go and do this. Tell Mount to hit it from outside the box. Tell Kai to chip in a ball. Give Werner the confidence, because they don't have to worry about what's behind them anymore. So I 100% agree with you. I want him to stay. I think he needs help. But if he doesn't ask for help or go look for help and things don't change in the next 3 to 4 games, which I think we have some pretty, you know, interesting games coming down the pipeline, unfortunately, he may not be with us much longer.
Yeah, and I have a question for you. So you said the term Chelsea man a couple of minutes ago. If Frank Lampard wasn't a Chelsea man, he was just another manager we had hired, would he still be in this job?
It's a tough question, because if you asked me this 10 years ago, the answer is no. Because to some degree, yes and no, Andres Villas-Boas was a Chelsea man, quote-unquote. But the writing was on the wall and he was moved off. Roberto Di Matteo was a Chelsea man. He didn't even get half a... Yes, he won the Champions League. Imagine that. He didn't even get a full half season before he's out the door. You described it perfectly. There's been a shift in the club that it doesn't work. It works for short term, but then you just keep searching left, you keep searching right, you keep looking for new managers, and the players eventually realize that we can just be crap, for lack of a better term, and we'll just get a new manager and he'll stop yelling at me for the same bad mistakes. No. I've said the same thing about Solskjaer, and I said the same thing. I was extremely vocal about Arteta. Give him time. Now, Where's Chelsea in the table? We're still in the top 10. That's horrible to say, because we need to be closer to the top 4. But when you and I were having the Arteta debate, Arsenal were fighting a relegation battle. And look at where they are today. So they gave him time. They got over the hump. And their hump was the same, if not a little bit longer. He just had to find the change. And that's what Lamps needs to do, is find the change. Whether that means he brings on more youth players, or you've been screaming for Billy Gilmore, or whatever it may be. Find that trigger, find that change, reset, and go from there.
Yeah, we sit in 8th, I believe. 8th. And if teams with that have games in hand, win those games and move up, we then slide into the second half of the table.
Right.
So it's not good, and it's not looking good at all, but... like I said, I want him to succeed, and I want him to be there, and I hope he turns it around. But if he doesn't, Jackie, we've got to talk about this real quick. If he doesn't, and let's say he's gone in the next couple of weeks, who comes in? Is it a short-term recruitment for the rest of the season, and then we look at someone in the summer, or do we bring in someone right now that stays and is trying to build a project or process, like we say, for the long term?
Yeah, I think we've done enough with Frank as far as recruitment of players specifically, and mentally maybe a style of football which is more geared towards let's control possession and kind of have the ball and do things with it. So there are a few names on the market that are open. I know PSG recently lost their manager. Juventus has lost their manager. I don't know much about all the other players out. I mean, managers out there, I apologize. But I think the Juventus manager, Massimo Allegri, If we ever had to cross that bridge, for me, might be somebody good, because we've had decent success with Italian managers, because again, they focus on defending and then kind of work their way up from there. Of course, to name a few was Carlo Ancelotti, had an amazing couple of seasons with us, and he unfortunately got hit out for even a decent second season. And then the famous Antonio Conte himself. Now, Sarri wasn't the best, but he still won us a trophy. So Italian managers seem to work out for us. Again, I repeat, I want Frank to stay. We're not at the point yet where we're relegated and out of the Premier League by any means. So let's give the man a time and opportunity to do what he's doing, just like Solskjaer was given, and now they're at the top of the table, and Arteta, and look at what he's doing. So, but that's kind of my analysis and thinking behind that. Who would you have, I guess?
Yeah, it's a tough one for me, and I see Thomas Tuchel, the ex-PSG manager, as you mentioned, maybe the favorite to come in. And I'm totally against that one, because I don't rate him. Personally, don't rate him as a manager. He took over a PSG team that had Neymar and Mbappe and literally had all the resources in terms of money to buy whoever they wanted, and he still found a way to complain and moan and talk about the executive board and stuff at PSG. So he could come in, do a job for a little bit, but long term, I don't see him getting along with our board and the way we do things. I know there's a lot of talk about him being German and our German signings would benefit from him, but we're a club thinking about beyond just our German signings. You know, these German signings need to be doing better for themselves, for the club, not just for a German manager. So that's my take on Tuchel. Allegri is a good call. Some of the other ones we put up on our Instagram yesterday were Julian Nagelsmann from Leipzig and Brendan Rodgers. So I'll tell you what our some of our listeners are thinking. Thomas Tuchel is the favorite out of those four. Nagelsmann is the second favorite, and then it's Allegri and Brendan Rodgers. So those are some of the options out there, and I hope we stick with lamps, and if we don't, then I really don't know who I want.
Yeah, and honestly, we've seen this before when a new manager comes in and just gives it a lift and gives a change and potentially puts us in the right direction. It's just us having this discussion is really, if this does happen, I would like to see somebody that we settle with. And it's just a hard, hard question. But anyway, at the risk of getting, drug into Chelsea for much longer, just quickly touching on the next games that are upcoming. We do play Luton Town in the FA Cup next, which on paper it should be a win, but you hear some shakiness in my voice because of the struggles we're going through. And then after that, it's Wolves, which is a tough, tough game. Burnley, tough game as well, both at home. But again, it's just a bad patch. And then a big one with Spurs away. So I think between Luton, Wolves, and Burnley, we need to really shake it up and go for it and kind of make some changes as far as tactics and even team selection maybe go and trying to get some a run of form together.
I agree with you, and I am a little concerned about that Luton game because we're in a position where even that game could surprise us. Not
Right.
surprise us in that if we lose, it would be okay, we're in a bad form, but surprise us in that we couldn't even win against Luton.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, should we move on to some other games now?
Yeah, let's move on. So there's been a lot of Premier League games this weekend. And this past week, actually. So I'll start with Sheffield versus Spurs. And that's mainly because I got my prediction horribly wrong. I predicted a Sheffield win. But Spurs won 3-1, and they're looking good and sitting closer to the top four.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of thought Spurs would beat Sheffield, but kudos to Sheffield to getting a goal over there, and hopefully they can continue to just build some consolation because I really think they're not going to make it past relegation, but hopefully they can at least entertain their fans because it's been a tough year for them. And then why don't we talk about Liverpool and Man United?
Yeah, the top of the table clash that everyone was talking about, and it ended 0-0 and another big six game that ends without any goals. We've had quite a few of those this season, but I think we have a fan question that came in, so why don't you touch on that?
Yeah, especially when it's nil-nil, we don't have too much to cover. It was a decent game overall, but yeah, there is a fan question, and I think we're going to have a quick discussion on that. So here it goes.
Premier Chels, this is Noreen Bojwani, first-time caller, long-time listener. Love the pod. Super great listening to both of your insights each week. And last week's episode with Alex was super awesome. I have a super frustrating but maybe interesting discussion point for you about these late offside flags. I'm a huge Liverpool fan. Watching the game yesterday with United, I know there was at least four occasions where it was super, super late. One specifically that, stands out was the one where Alisson blocked from point blank range Rashford, where it could have led to either Alisson, getting probably kicked in the face, him landing out and probably injuring Rashford, to kind of go the other way there. It's been kind of frustrating, kind of slows down momentum of the game, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. Let me know what you think.
All right, so that came from Noreen Bojwani. So Rahul, I mean, you heard his question. It's actually a pretty good debatable question and a debate point. Give me some of your thoughts on that one.
Yeah, that's a very good question, and thank you, Naren. I enjoy these late offside calls in that it allows the attacking team to finish their attacking play. And if it ends in a goal, then you obviously review that with VAR. And if it doesn't, then you just kind of move on and the game continues. But in the instance that Naren mentions, which was the point blank range, I saw that, and yes, it was tough, but I don't think the referees, if this rule wasn't in effect, would have had enough time to put their flags up to avoid an injury. So I think that one's kind of a gray area because it's coming off of a corner. The ball can bounce and land anywhere. And as a goalie, you react and jump and get in the way of bodies, which is what Allison did. So that's kind of a gray area, but in terms of every other scenario where a player runs in behind a defender, I think it allows for a faster game and it allows for an attacking team to finish off their chance and then get reviewed, which is what VAR is for.
Yeah, so completely agree with you. Let me just read a quick snippet off the Premier League website as to far as what this means. And this is for any fan that doesn't understand the delayed offside rule. It's going to give you a high-level overview, and then I'll give you my quick thoughts on it. Is when an immediate goal-scoring opportunity is likely to occur and there is a tight marginal offside call, the assistant referee should keep their flag down until the passage of play is completed. Once the goal scoring opportunity is complete, either a goal is scored or a chance is gone. The assistant will then flag to indicate the initial offense. If a goal is scored, the VAR will then review the offside judgment. Where there's a clear and obvious goal scoring opportunity and the assistant is certain the attacker is actively involved in an offside position, then the assistant should indicate the offense immediately. In both these situations, the referee should wait to blow the whistle until the immediate phase of play has ended. So that's just a quick snippet off the Premier League website. Essentially, the way I interpret what is being told to us is it is for the benefit of the attacking play. And we all know the Premier League is one of the most exciting leagues in the world. And so something like this has been put in to benefit a goal-scoring opportunity. It absolutely allows you, in case the referee makes a wrong call, for the complete game to end where it could result in a goal. Now, the flip side, which is a very, very valid argument coming in from Narain, is if the referee indeed knows that this is offside, delays their flag raise because they want VAR or whatever the reason may be to review it, and it ends in a clash with two defenders or a goalkeeper hitting a player. An example was Jordan Pickford hitting Van Dijk. Now, I know that didn't relate to offside, but a situation like that can occur. And ultimately, these are the risks of playing football. It doesn't happen with just offside. It can happen anywhere in the field. In fact, we saw some horrible tackles with Fulham versus Chelsea. So I think overall, it's kind of a pain, but it's there to serve the benefit of a goal going into the net. And that's really just my high-level thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. That the injury is definitely a scary product of this late delayed flag. But I have to give credit to the female referee on the sidelines in the Leicester Chelsea game. Timo Werner did get the ball in the net towards the end of the game, and she put her flag up right away, and they reviewed it obviously. But she knew it, and she was spot on. Even in that split second, that he was offside. And you have to give the referees the benefit of the doubt that they would put it up if they had any idea that this is offside. So I agree with you, and the referees should be a little more certain about their calls. If they know it's offside, call it. But if you don't, then like the rule says, let the play continue and let the game and then the attacking team see out the play.
Absolutely. And don't just wait for Rahul and I's review and kind of analysis of this. This is a great question. We might just post a little quick question on Instagram or Twitter, and we'd love to engage with you guys and get your thoughts on this one. But thanks for the question. We appreciate it. Keep them coming in, guys. It's something great for us to discuss. Absolutely love it. Let's quickly move on then to Man City versus Crystal Palace, and they actually played another game, right?
Yeah, they did. So Man City are on fire. They've won 6 games in a row, unbeaten, I think 16 Premier League games. Blew away Crystal Palace 4-0. John Stones, a.k.a. Harry Kane of Man City, scoring twice.
Yep.
And Gundogan and Sterling finishing the scoring in that game, 4-0 win. And then they played Villa again and won 2-0. And there was another offside issue in this game, which was Rodri was pressing the Villa defense, had actually gone past them closer to Martinez, the goalie. And Martinez clears the ball up the field. I think it was Bernardo Silva. Some Man City player heads it and pushes it back towards Rodri and the Villa defense. And Tyrone Mings brings it down. And Rodri presses him, pings the ball off of him, and starts Man City's attack, which they score off of, and open the scoring with Bernardo Silva. So the whole controversy was, when Rodri pings the ball off of Tyrone Mings, is that considered offside?
Yeah, it's a tough one, because by the letter of the law, because the ball is being played back in by a Manchester City player and Rodri is now technically offside, yes, but from what I understand and the way the law is written is if he's interfering with play. Now, for this particular instance, it actually came to Tyrone Mings first, and Rodri was quick enough or smart enough or agile, whatever you want to call it, to quickly sneak back and pinch it. It's one of those gray areas, but the law is written in such a way that it benefits attacking in the Premier League. So I understand why Villa are frustrated by it, but as a neutral, I think it's okay.
Yeah, you're right. So the PGMOL came out and said the rule is as soon as the defender, in this case Tyrone Mings, touches the ball, Rodri is then free to come and ping it off of him and restart Man City's attack. So it's again, another gray area that needs to be addressed. But the Premier League, the FA, and FIFA need to address some of these gray areas before teams are relegated or titles are decided off of these decisions.
Yeah, and that win took Manchester City to the top of the table for what, I think 2 hours maybe, not even?
Yeah, so Man City knocked off Leicester City, who had gone top after beating Chelsea. So they were on top, Manchester City, for about 2 hours, like you said, before Manchester United went away to Fulham and won 2-1. And talk about being in good form and fighting for each other. Man United are everything that I wish Chelsea were right now. And it hurts me to say that, but they deservedly get the win. And Paul Pogba, man, he said he wanted to leave, but he's putting up some performances that might convince United to give him a new contract or just hold on to him.
Yeah, and honestly, with all the criticism he gets, Paul Pogba can be that kind of player. And if you haven't seen his goal, go check it out. It's incredible, because when you're under that pressure, this is how you expect a team to react, or even an individual player in this case. And complete credit to Manchester United. We've been unfair to them. We've eaten humble pie, and they are really flying high. And kudos to Paul Pogba to just kind of brush off the haters and continue to play the way he knows he can play.
Exactly. And credit to Ole. I know we've said it in the past, but he really has found a formula and a way of getting things done. So congratulations to them, and they go back on top of the table. So let's move on to the Chelsea women. And they've actually also played twice since the last time we recorded. So let's get into their game. They played Manchester United at home over the weekend and won 2-1, which took them to the top of the table with the game in hand. And so they sit on top with 26 points. Manchester United as well are 26 points, but Chelsea have the better goal difference and have played a game less. So they sit on top. And they're having a very good season, I must say. I mean, they're undefeated in the WSL. They've just made it to the semifinals of the Conti Cup, which is the FA Women's League Cup, and defeated Manchester City 4-2. And it was a good comeback in that they were down 2-1 until the 90th minute and pulled it back to 2-2 and then took the game to extra time and found 2 goals in the opening 15 minutes of extra time to win it 4-2 and advance to the semifinals, like I said. And they're actually the holders of this competition. So they're feeling good about their chances of, defending their trophy. And congratulations to them, Emma Hayes, all the players involved. And they're giving me some joy in these tough times. And they come back this weekend against in for they come back this weekend for a game against Bristol City, where if they avoid defeat, Chelsea team will become the team with the longest unbeaten run ever.
Wow, that's incredible. And honestly, whenever we review the women's team, it's always about how powerful and strong we are. Coming down from where we're potentially going to lose in the 90th minute to winning is the quality of steel and effort that I want to see from any Chelsea team. So very, very excited for the women. Keep going, keep winning. We love to support you guys and watch what you're doing.
Yeah, and you touched on a great thing. The character they showed is exactly what everyone at Chelsea should be showing. And they haven't won a game at Manchester City in a while. So to do that for the first time takes a lot of credit and effort and everyone pulling and going in the right direction. So wishing them the best for the weekend.
Absolutely. All right, shall we move on to the FA Cup now?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, so it's just a quick review we'll do for this particular episode. Chelsea are playing Luton at home. Rahul, why don't you give us a predicted 11?
Yeah, so we've seen Lampard make some changes in the FA Cup, and rightly so. So I think Kepa comes back. He was okay in that last game, so he gets his spot in the FA Cup. I think Reece James needs to play. I know we've been critical of him in this episode, but there's only one way he's going to get out of this, and that's by playing. So this may be a good opportunity for him. Zuma, Christensen have to play. I think he's played Silva and Rudiger, so they've got to be rested. And then Emerson, who was very good against Morecambe, keeps his spot at left back. Billy Gilmore has to start for me. I know I keep calling for him, but hopefully Lampard will listen this time. Mason Mount is going to play. That's just a given. And even though I'd like him to be rested, I think Lampard wants him in there as a trusted soldier of his. And I think on the other side, Kai Havertz. We've spoken about how he performs in these games. And then up front, I'd go with Hudson-Odoi. I think he's going to play Werner and Ziyech.
Yeah, again, a very solid lineup. No disrespect to Luton. We could potentially play some more youth, but given the issues we've covered on this particular episode and kind of the form we're in, it's a good opportunity, and we've said this before, for players like Kai and Werner to potentially get on the score sheet and just work towards building confidence. I mean, there's no other way to look at it. So hopefully that works out for them. I hope that Emerson has a great game. I, for one, think he's a really, really good option at left back, especially if Chilwell is up and down. Not saying that he is, but he's performed really well whenever called upon. And completely 100% agree with you that Billy Gilmore needs to get this game and just dominate and show Lampard what he can do on a consistent basis.
Yeah, so I'm glad we agree on the lineup, and hopefully Lampard will too. And like you said, I want to see a good performance in this game. It's been a while since we've put in a good performance. And if we do that, do the basics right, like we've been asking for weeks now, I think we get a good result. And for me, I think we win it 3-0.
I'm in the same boat. I think we win the game. I think we'll win it 2-0. Other than a good performance, I just kind of want to see a team performance. Someone a little more cohesive, players kind of looking to each other, passing to each other, and really communicating, because some of the communication in recent games has not been good. And again, no disrespect to Luton. I always have to keep saying that on paper, with the team that you and I have put out on paper today, this should be an easy one.
I agree.
So I think this week we're going to actually do a slightly different segment for you guys. We've got a little bit of feedback. We usually do our blast from the past. We've done quite a few of those so far, and we've had a lot of fun with those as well. But a few weeks ago, we actually did a transfer rumor segment, and we are now towards the third week of January, and it's getting hot and heavy. So we decided to kind of bring this one back, and we've heard some good feedback about it too. So I'll start with a Chelsea one. It's one that kind of pains me to talk about because I've talked about Chelsea boys through and through, and it's Ashley Tomori, Fikayo Tomori. So right now there is a potential loan option going to AC Milan with the option to buy at the end of this loan. So it's a good move for Tomori in the fact that he really hasn't seen much game time, but unfortunately there is a buy. It's not a required clause, but there is a buy clause at the end of the 6 months loan. Rahul, any comments on this one?
Don't let him go. But hey, for his development, this is an excellent move to go abroad to play in Italy with some of the better players. I'm thinking of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and the AC Milan manager. I forget his name at the top of my head right now, but they're doing well. They're sitting, I believe, on top of the league. And it's going to be a great experience for him. And whatever happens, if he comes back to us, if AC Milan don't buy him, he'll come back a better player and a better person, hopefully. But if Lampard goes, I wonder what happens with this deal.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. Definitely to play in the same team as someone like a Zlatan Ibrahimovic is great, but also behind him, he's got a fantastic goalkeeper in Donnarumma, which is another rumor that's flying about there, and I'll just link that really quickly, is Donnarumma to Chelsea. Now, I don't know if this one will ever materialize. Donnarumma is right now in heavy negotiations with AC Milan, and he most likely will sign and continue with them, but you never know. Chelsea have just got Mendy and looking to offload Kepa, so this might be something to look at in the summer, so just something to pay attention to. Another one that's not going away, and I'm sure people are tired of hearing this one, is Jadon Sancho to Manchester United. There is talk of a deal that could be done in January. I doubt that will happen, but it would have to come up with 100 million plus from Man United side to Dortmund. The deal would involve the purchase going through, but loaning back to Dortmund till the end of the season. So with United forking off that much cash, I don't know if that will happen in January just because they wouldn't be able to use him, but stranger deals have happened, so look out for that one again, and hopefully something materializes or it goes away. But anyway, a familiar name that we need to talk about is Christian Eriksen. So a lot of people know he left Tottenham Hotspur because he wanted greener pastures. He went over to Inter Milan, and there were no greener pastures to be found, unfortunately. He's looking to get a loan to get out of there, and ironically, Jose Mourinho is a big fan still and would like to have him back. This one hinges on an interesting deal with potentially Dele Alli going to PSG to link up with Mauricio Pochettino. So, might be a quick merry-go-round there. Rahul, I'd just like to get your thoughts really quickly on that one.
Yeah, I think it's a good deal for everyone involved. Eriksen, Spurs, Dele Alli, and PSG. And for Dele, it's a great opportunity to go play with the team that's performing really well and work under a manager that he has a great relationship with. I am a little surprised that Mourinho wants to bring Eriksen back, but it could be another weapon in their arsenal that they can throw him on when the games are tight and he could find a Kane or a Son and change games with them.
Yeah, and you know that Mourinho must rate him highly for a player that did not want to stay and play with him to bring him back. There must be some sort of quality that he shows that we're not seeing. But either way, we'll watch out for that one as well. Another one, and I'm personally relieved to see this one because it's just been a horror story for this gentleman. It's Mesut Ozil. He has been left out of Arsenal's squad for whatever reason. He was on a huge weekly contract and it just seemed like there was no way other than him playing out his contract, whether it's for money to finish off or Arsenal holding on for pride, I don't know. Long story short, Arsenal terminated his contract and he was free to transfer over to Fenerbahce. And it is super exciting because Fenerbahce have wanted him. Ozil is actually of Turkish descent. So it's a nice one that works out. It'll be good to see Ozil back playing football and providing assists to some of the players out there. A little low profile one that's coming down, but it's another name that Rahul's talked about, saying whenever we talk about him, we're still surprised he plays for Chelsea. But Danny Drinkwater has gone on loan to Kasımpaşa, a Turkish club as well. And good luck to Danny. He really needs to do something to rebuild his career. It's just not gone the right way for him. Another one coming out of Manchester United this time is Jesse Lingard himself. So Jesse Lingard had a couple of good seasons with Manchester United. Still relatively young, just not getting enough game time right now. It looks like Aston Villa or Celtic are interested. Be interesting to see where he ends up. I think he does need game time, so we'll kind of see how that plays out. And there's one that I don't know much about, but want to share that with you guys either way. Gaëtan Laborde to West Ham. I hope I'm saying his name right. West Ham lost striker Steven Haller, who transferred to Ajax, and they're looking to kind of bring in another striker at this point in time. So we'll watch this one closely and see how that plays out. The last one is a ridiculous rumor coming out of left field, is Erling Haaland to Chelsea. And I only threw this one on here because it's coming from multiple sources and a lot of accounts and a lot of internet talk about this particular one. Is Chelsea are willing to smash all their transfer records to bring him in the summer. So, Rahul, you've been quiet over the last few. What are your thoughts on this one? I don't know if we've had luck with strikers in recent years.
I would love to see him in a Chelsea blue, but given how our recent striker signings have gone, I don't know how this would work out for us, and I would hate for us to drop £100+ million and go through this pain of having a striker that doesn't work for us. So if it happens, I'll be happy and over the moon, but then I'll also be a little skeptical and worried about what's to come, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. I've also heard Manchester United are in for him, so it's equally important that we get back into some form and push for the Champions League places, because if we're not in the Champions League next season, we could forget about him and some of the other players.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's quite a quality player, so I'm sure multiple teams will be after him. Now, if you like this segment, please give us some feedback. Let us know. Ping us. We can continue to do this. There are about 11 days left in the transfer window. So towards the last week, we may bring this back because it's going to get pretty busy with some teams looking to sign some players, depending on what they need and how they need those players. So let us know.
Yeah, let us know. And send us your questions like Naren did. We look forward to discussing and engaging with you guys in the future. But that wraps it up for today. It's been a long episode. We've covered some tough topics in terms of Chelsea and the recent results and Lampard's future. But we'd love to hear from you on that as well. So shoot us a message on Instagram or Twitter. And our handle is @ThePremierChels. Until then, tune in, subscribe, and we'll be back in the very near future. Thank you, guys.
Thank you all. Bye.